This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Rebranding Safety. What you're about to hear next is an amazing live conversation between me and the one and only Sydney Decker, coming at you live from the EHS Congress in Berlin. So we were there for the whole week. It was amazing. If you haven't been there, definitely get along. It's an amazing, intense, but amazing couple of days with just workshop, speaker. Now, if you're thinking, I can't get to Berlin, fair enough. They announced live at the Congress as well that they are doing a event at the London Expo in December as well. So check that out. We'll put some links to the website down below. But let's get into the amazing conversation live from the EHS Congress in Berlin with Sydney Decker.
And you got to spell my name differently, my friend.
I think I spell it wrong every time.
S-I-D.
I wrote that like 2 minutes ago. You know that. Sorry.
It's fine.
We're off to a good start.
We are off to a good start.
Do you want to introduce yourself, Sydney?
My name is Sydney Decker, James. I was born in Amsterdam. I currently work in Brisbane, Australia. That is, I think, my seventh country on four continents, lots of different languages.
Seven countries that you've lived in?
Yeah, lived and worked. Yeah. And flown, actually, I think. Yeah. Wow. So, which is pretty cool. Even flew in Singapore. Not a lot of airspace there, obviously. So
that's amazing. So,
yeah. But this is the nicest climate yet.
So, okay, right.
And of course, as usual, in a two career family with two academics, you know, it took two academic jobs in the same town at the same time at two different universities, right, for this family to pack up from where we were before to go to the other end of the world.
How much do you think, like, living in those different countries has contributed to your quite open, like, you must have quite an open mind to be able to do what you've done in safety?
That's actually an interesting question.
That must have influenced it, surely.
I was told yesterday, I'll get to an answer to that, because it's an interesting speculation, actually. I mean, we cannot really run the counterfactual experiment, right? Mm. Would be nice if we could. Mm. Let's try life again, but and see how narrow-minded I end up. You know? But it's an interesting Gedanken experiment, right? An interesting thought experiment. I think when it comes to open-mindedness and the sort of the broader vision. Yesterday, I was, in fact, somebody said to me, "I don't know, but you know, your thinking in safety is like a Renaissance man thinking. You know, you grab any different science, you can grab sociology, theology, psychology, engineering, all kinds of things, and you combine it all, and you extract from it what works and what's helpful, what is good to think with, as Levi Strauss once said, anthropology. And so, I think part of that comes from upbringing.
Okay.
Particularly my mom was a, she died last year, but she was a minister in the Dutch Reformed Church, and not a staunch believer at all, but very progressive, and she had to be, I mean, first female in a, you know, very male-dominated profession, so she had to find creative angles. And, James, the other thing that I've been told is that, but there's probably people listening who know much more about this stuff than you and I, but birth order.
Definitely more than me.
I don't do the psychology of birth order, but this is a subspecialty, right?
Yeah.
Birth order really matters. I'm the middle child.
Right, okay.
And normally, if you're the eldest child, then there are certain expectations, right? You got to be the fastest, the quickest, various things, and you inevitably end up disappointing your parents because you never sort of meet the mark, right? And then the youngest, and of course that was a girl, is always the cutest and the smallest, and you know, and so they got it nailed already, right? So the middle goes, well, what is in this for me,
not the
right?
cutest, like, not the first.
Not the fastest, not the first, not the, exactly. So generally, they become more creative. They have to, right?
That's
so they find, and they break paths. They find ways out of that middle ground in some sense in order to become themselves. So I don't know, we just may be making shit up, but it sounds like a good foundation story.
Sounds like a good paper, I feel like.
But I haven't answered your question. Actually, that's true, although I do not possess the expertise to talk about that, but I could talk about the experience maybe to somebody who does that for a living. But anyway, so back to your question about the countries. Yes, I would have to agree with your was it a hypothesis or proposal or suggestion that living in multiple places and different ontologies, and it's not just different languages, because, you know, if you, as Charlemagne, right, the emperor of the Holy Roman Empire, once said, if you know a people's language, you know their soul.
Yeah.
Because, as you probably know, I mean, the French parse the world in a completely different way. I mean, their grammar works very differently, right? And then, so I started to learn Chinese, and parse the world completely differently, right? I mean, it's very object-based, and there's nothing in common with sort of the Latin languages or the Germanic languages that I grew up with. And so, but learning those different languages, and then, of course, having English smeared out of across all of this, which is not my native tongue, of course, Dutch is, I think will have broadened and what makes sense to people, you know, both socially, professionally, ethically, to be exposed to all of this, and not just as a tourist. Oh, how cute! This is what they do here, museum. You know, no.
But
living among it,
yeah.
And making a living among it. And getting them to part with cash to have you at their universities. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's
thriving,
a different,
not surviving kind of
and
thing.
And thriving, not surviving. Well, yeah, there were certain...
Or surviving, it's okay.
The country where I survived rather than thrived was actually yours, James.
That's what we all do in England, if I'm honest.
Yeah. All
we
40,
don't
50 million of you.
General.
That's
the weather's shit, the people are shit.
Yes, we could. That list could go on.
Yeah,
I could fill the rest of the conversation.
We really would. I like what you said about languages. I'm a massive geek, like a huge Star Wars geek. Like, I love it. And one of the characters in Star Wars was Grand Admiral Thrawn, and he was in the animated series first. And he is like this baddie, but he learns about how to beat his enemy by looking at their art and their architecture.
Aha.
And I always thought that was an interesting insight.
But what an ethical twist to learn about that in order to vanquish them.
To defeat them. Yeah. It was fascinating.
So he
builds this great respect for them, but then uses it against them. It's a fascinating character.
So what exactly have you taken as an example from that, James?
I don't know.
No,
he's like one of my he's
here.
One of my favourite characters. I'm
well,
not sure what he said about me.
I reckon it would, brother.
Yeah. I feel like you said earlier, you're not competent for this.
No, but I do write about ethics and justice, and so, you know, there's a little bit of that. But
I'm screwed.
Okay, fair enough. So, So how many countries have you lived in, John?
I am very sheltered. So I've lived in the UK my entire life.
So you haven't had any sun in your face in your entire life?
No, okay, just how sunny it is now.
In Berlin. You have to go to Berlin to get the sun.
Yeah. I got off the plane and was like, oh, my God.
What is this? UV, oh, my God. Yeah, vitamin B. Wow.
Yeah, I'm very sheltered, very sheltered. Traveling for me is quite an intimidating
thing. Your questions are pretty good, though.
Neither of those were planned so far.
I have no idea what you've got planned.
No.
That's right. So you could make it all up, but I go,
I genuinely
could. That was well planned.
Well, I do have some actual planned questions that I...
Those are probably incredibly boring.
Well, I don't know. I'm nervous to ask one. So I really like your work.
But if it's a shit question, I'll just tell you.
Let's find out.
Yeah.
I know you will.
Yeah.
I love your work, Sydney.
That's
you could say that it's a good... there's some bits in your work. The way you are quite provocative in the way that you... Mm. Particularly your earlier work, where it's quite well-marketed. But, do you think that's contributed to the kind of bickering and tribalistic side of stuff we have now?
Interesting.
I've wanted to ask you that question for about 4 years.
Yeah, so, I mean, in part, in order to give you an answer that might satisfy your four-year brewing curiosity, give me the context in which that question was born.
So what I see a lot on, say, like social media, particularly in the UK, which is where most of my time is a lot of... It's not as simple as when I started in kind of this space, it was very, are you safety one, are you safety two, which I think means you haven't read any of Eric's work, but that aside, there still is now this kind of tribalistic of like BBS versus HOP and safety differently versus something else. And there is this kind of
tribalistic approach and conversation and bickering of like Spore is better than this, and it's like, for me as a practitioner, it doesn't feel very helpful.
Well, but I think we need to, I mean, first let's make a distinction between dialectics and tribalism. I mean, dialectics, I think, is a rhetorical device that helps push a field into new areas. Yep. Where you go, hey, we're trying to do something different from, but different from what? Well, yep. In that case, you need to, I was going to say characterize them, but I think every now and again you get tricked into caricaturing them.
Yeah, right?
Otherwise you cannot make the difference very clear, and certainly doesn't become PowerPointable or marketable, or publishers go, why is this new, why is this different?
And innovation is inherently different, so it's always going to be different.
And that's exactly right. Not only that, innovation has to break through constraints that everybody else took for granted, or took as given, right? Otherwise you don't innovate. And so innovation, you're right, is per definition non-compliant.
Non-compliant
with the orthodox consensus or sort of the standard model.
Yep.
I would characterize that as dialectic, right?
Okay.
Two different ways of describing and characterizing. The tribalism, I think, is something that nobody is powerful, good, or arrogant enough to have any control over.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? These are complex systems. People start coagulating and organizing around what they see as marketable and commercializable solutions, or useful or safe solutions for that matter, or fashionable for that, right?
Yeah.
And they want to join that fashion. And so I don't think that the roles that the Eric Holnagels and Dave Woodses and Deckers have in this field, which is to develop and push the science, right?
And
Eric, bless his heart, is famously immune against. But I know you'll be talking to him, hopefully. Necessary pragmatics, you know, and I love him dearly for it, as in, because it allows him such a long leash, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Whereas others, many have written a little book here or there, or, you know, want to make their name, here's my book, you know, here's my 20th book, and here's Eric's 30th book, you know. So, they are and remain beholden to implementation, to practical usefulness, and I think for what Eric and I do, that easily becomes seen as co-opted, pedestrian, non-innovative, recycle, repeat, rinse, repeat kind of thing. Whereas we always try to stay ahead of the... Well, that sounds as if it's motivational. We always try to stay ahead of the curve. I think that's BS. I think my brain allows me no comfort.
Okay.
It just keeps pushing me. I go, that's not good enough. Hang on, there's more.
Right.
There's other layers. There's more.
Curious.
That's interesting. Naturally curious, naturally impatient, probably. Mm-hmm. But back to the original dialectics that you've puzzled over. A common observation might be that one becomes slightly milder with age.
I've seen that myself, to be fair. The earlier...
Well, you're 23.
I know. Yeah, I'm 32. But when we started the podcast, it was only 6 years ago. And if I listen back to my original, it makes me cringe.
It's totally curly.
So, like, if I talk to a customer now, I'm like, watch it, but don't judge me on the first year or so.
No, exactly. But Michel Foucault said that, right? I mean, don't judge me on my early work. Is a man not allowed to develop his thinking along the ages?
So we are.
So don't judge us by that. On the other hand, I think it's instructive to go back and say, perhaps it had a function to be as strident and as divisive as I saw necessary at the time. And the risk, and I've certainly come to understand that, is that it becomes, no, it can become dogmatic, right?
Yeah.
As in, if it's not this,
it's
crap, and you shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's probably redeeming features in all of these attempts,
right?
And so the thing is, at some point, when that's the conference we're at, right? I mean, there's lots of people here who are much closer to the market than Eric and I.
Yeah, yeah.
And if it weren't for them, then the stuff we write would be I wasn't going to say useless, but wouldn't have the legs that you guys are giving it.
Yeah, so, okay.
But in order,
like, you need the practitioners in a way to, like,
well, the practitioner
to mess
exactly.
around with it,
to mess around with it, yeah. To read, to keep abreast, to stay up to date, to stay ahead, absolutely. But to mess around with it, try it out, see what works, what doesn't. However, I think the important thing to remember in that is also that in order to do that well, you have to make sacrifices, right? Mm. Analytical sacrifices. Don't make it too deep. Don't make it too complex. Don't make it too right. Don't say, well, if this under these 15 conditions, it might work. Except that we haven't really done the empirical work to test that yet. So you're on your own when you're trying this.
Yeah,
right?
That's interesting.
It is, however, have I answered part of your question?
No, I like it because it's this balance between, like, simplifying something so that it works in practicality, but then not running the trade-off of, like, oversimplification.
However, that was never the reason for my stridency initially and my divisiveness. Yeah. I don't think I could justify it that way because it was truly a strong belief in, yes, we can keep doing what we've been doing, but we're not seeing any great difference in the results that we're getting from it. So we should start doing something differently, differently. And I mean, all of these labels are super cute, you know. That's what they are hope.
But you need that simplification to draw the eye at first.
For certain audiences,
and then you hope that they go into the depth.
But most don't.
Most don't.
No, they stick at the surface. Exactly, and go, oh, we're sort of not blaming, right?
Yeah,
we're not calling it that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Why do we even use that word then? Right? And so, but James, hopefully, but you can hold me to this, and we can talk about this in the next 4 years. Hopefully, I evince greater levels of compassion and empathy for other points of view in this business. As long as the argument or the data is there to support it, right? Flaky claims, vacuous, empty claims. I've seen that before. You know, procedural deviance is the number one killer in our business. You go, okay, where's the data?
Yeah, okay. Right?
And so, and Eric is at 5 steps ahead. You know, work is imagined, work is done. There's always a difference. It's trivial. In fact, it is. It's not even worth remarking on. You know, and he's 5 books ahead already.
Yeah.
You know, beyond that. So, I hope that sort of makes a little.
Well, I enjoyed it. So,
thank you.
Yeah, I've got one other question. So, like this, we're gonna have this conference, right? Mm. And we're gonna be talking about some amazing things.
Well,
and hopefully,
as measured how?
Well, on my own opinion of,
but
like,
you haven't heard them yet.
No, I think there's some interesting topics there. So some amazing speakers, right? And I've read most of their works. Hopefully, anyway. Well, the older
and
stuff,
you're only
not
32.
So much the new stuff.
Oh my
stuff.
God!
But what I see in reality of, like, real working world, so we're quite lucky in what
we... So this is not a real working world.
Well, all right, okay.
It's my real
world. You're tying me in knots here, man. Give me a break. Jesus. This is why I'm not an academic. Right. So, okay, in small business world... So
what do you mean? I'm an airline pilot.
Let's put it like this, right? So 80%, apparently 80% of the British economy is small businesses.
Yeah, shopkeepers.
So, small businesses.
Yeah.
And then... If you look at, say, like construction in the UK, all of it is structured by one big contractor and then hundreds of tiny businesses underneath. I feel like, you know, we talk about workers done, workers imagined. I feel like if I was going to summarize, oversimplify it in a sense, there is like a safety as imagined and a safety as done. What we're talking about here seems so far away from the reality of the working world. Like, how do we bridge that gap? So, like, if I'm talking about workers done, workers imagine, the aim I'm trying to do is shorten the gap for my customers. It feels like in safety we need to shorten that gap. Like, what do you... There's no question there, really,
but
like,
is,
what
because,
are your thoughts
well,
on
the way
on
to
that?
Engage, James, is don't mention the S word. Don't talk about safety. Talk about work.
Right.
What makes a shit day? What makes a good day?
Yeah.
That's how you start. That's how you learn. And then you will learn very quickly that, you know, you're... And don't worry about compliance and golden rules and that sort of nonsense in your engagement. You know, I mean, if there are certain things that you then collectively agree, would be smart to actually not do this and do that or something. And sure. But to a priori, you know, come thundering in and say, here's the 10 rules, you know. Moses tried that too, right?
Yeah.
So, And as he walked down,
to be fair, that's lasted a long time. Like, people still talk about that now.
Well, they talk about it, but they're not doing it.
Yeah, true.
Right? So, which is true for Golden Rules too, right? We talk about it, we're not doing it. In fact, so yes, how long? That would be probably 3,500 years ago. So anyway, so he came down the hill, right?
Yeah.
And they're already violating the rules that they hadn't even read yet.
Yeah, true.
So in that sense, you know, humanity is perfectly imperfect, right? So don't come with the expectation that any of that will work necessarily. Understand work. Ask questions about work.
Mm.
What makes it fun? What makes it difficult? What is a good day? What is not a good day?
Mm.
That's why does it make sense to work this way and not another? You know, those are the sorts of questions, and then you can learn so much. And then you're talking about work as done and safety as done, because they'll tell you things, right? They'll sit there and go, "Well,
they do,
yeah. If I do it this way, well, that'll come falling down. Well, that safety is done, right? So, but I like it. I mean, the thing you don't want, and this is what we see a lot, obviously, is this sense of playing work as imagined in order to please the audience.
Yeah,
right? It's rigging up sort of a pop-up theater. In order, right? Auditors or whoever comes or an inspectorate or the management or walk around or James for that matter. What I've, and it's not that I don't do these things. I mean, what I find, James, to make authentic contact with people who do the dangerous and dirty heavy lifting. Well, first of all, go do the work yourself, right? Which is what I did flying jets. You're the first to arrive at the scene of the accident, right? And that buys a whole bunch of street cred, right?
Yeah.
That does help. You know, you're throwing some bags, you help with other things in that sort of task. But also, do what is necessary to build that trust, obviously, to get the authentic contact with how work is done.
What about, like, the safety profession, though, and, like, what they're doing? So, like, literally...
They're like HR, right? Like human remains. I mean, HR... HR has only one function. That's to manage the liabilities of the organization, right? And I think safety in most Western countries has become like that as
well.
It's not to help people work safe. It's to manage the liabilities that otherwise would impact the organization, right?
Because we'll get
this,
like...
This may be a very cynical point of view. Perhaps,
no, I think it's a not naive point of view. It's like an in-touch point of view, because what we get a lot of, like I said, we're lucky to work with small business and big business. Mm. And I'm really interested when we get like a referral for a small business, and I can normally tell from get-go whether they're right for us or not, because they'll go, what we need, James, is like, we just want like a quick, like, right now we're not ready for proper safety. We just want to like get tick the boxes is what we want. And tick the boxes is this old kind of cliche, but it still exists.
Yeah, they may not actually use those words, but you very quickly get the vibe that
that's
what they
need.
Yeah,
and I'm like, well, you realize you can tick the boxes, but like, if you still kill someone...
Without James, the judge isn't going to care.
Yeah, the judge is going to go, well, you've got all this paperwork, it's still shit. It doesn't do anything.
Correct. In fact, you should have... Yeah, exactly.
Which I think
might even get you in more trouble.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Greg Smith's work, I think, is really good around that as well. But like, there is still this, like, there are safety professionals that deliver that, and that's the gap. I mean, is like, everyone here is not going to be that type of safety professional, but there's like another thousands of safety professionals, if not millions, that still are just churning out this rubbish,
in my opinion. Clutter. But it clearly fulfills an important role in capitalist, you know, working arrangements.
That's interesting. It does, because what's happened is you're in this world where, like, you kind of can't get on site, or you can't get the contract, and the contract is $6 million or something like that. For this small business, it's like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, we just want a policy. That's all we want is a policy. So that I'm like, can I say no to my customers, like £6 million contract?
No.
Or do I say, I can give you a policy, but then hopefully we'll still do it right after we've done that. But it's this weird world that we're in, where we've got like this huge push of like what I'm calling safety as imagined. What we see here is like what we want to do.
Mm.
And then this world that we're operating in, that it's like our customer doesn't want what we're selling.
But James, I mean that gives rise to a very important question that I have for the sort of thing that you do, and that many people at the conference would be doing. So how do you protect yourself? How do you manage your liabilities if this is your safety plan and suggestion and this and that, and then 3 years later they come back and say, oh, but James told us to do this.
That's a
and
great
now we three
question.
Dead bodies. And
that's
so,
a great. You should do a podcast because that's a great question.
Tell me a great answer.
We don't
called,
do what, it.
It's called indemnity insurance.
Yes, that as well. That as well, which is expensive.
No kidding.
Yeah. But we don't do it. So like we tend to. I think many consultancies will do it and they'll be full of terms and conditions and caveats to say you must implement this. Mm. We've got like a package that we do, which is probably, I'd say, the closest we can get to of like producing generic paperwork, so to speak. But we cost a hell of a lot more because we're quite hands-on. So we go into the business,
yeah,
we try to understand what
and
we
do it. Hours,
I'd
yeah.
say it's still... I'd say it's still quite a big gap from actual workers done because they still have to do the legwork and take it and do it. So I still see a weakness in that. But we naturally have done that, priced it in a way that people who don't want it look at it and go, I ain't paying that. Because they're looking at like a couple of £100, that's all they want to spend, whereas it's a couple of grand for us.
And there's probably somebody who's willing to give it to them for a couple of hundred.
Oh, it is, yeah, it is. And that's the challenge that we've got is like, particularly I look at this from like businessman hat, I'm trying to pay the bills, feed the family. I'm like, we get priced out all the time, and it's like, I know this is the right way. I know this is the right way, but it don't pay the mortgage.
Called professional ethics, brother.
Yeah, it's just so interesting.
But there are limits to how much that can cost.
Yeah.
So now I hear you. That would be worthy of a workshop at the next conference in Berlin.
That's a very good point.
We shall talk to Aaron
that's
about this.
Very good point, actually. Let's do it. Thank you very much for your time, Sydney.
James,
really
pleasure.
Appreciate it.
Pleasure,
it's great
brother.
To meet
Thank
you.
You. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.